Welcome to Hawk Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Hawk Weekly, weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor, owner, or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And back once again. Happy, happy Monday, everyone. Hope you had a great Father's Day here in the United States. And if you are a father, I hope it went well for you.
Yes.
But yes, we are back, and it is time to do another episode of Haunt Weekly. And we actually struggled with the topic this week, because our focus has been elsewhere this week.
It has, and the other topic that was possible, we kind of want to get somebody in on, so we're working on that.
But what we've been working on is a bunch of reviews for escape games. We've been playing some mad escape games lately. We've been all over the shop here in New Orleans playing them. And we're combining that with our experiences elsewhere. And we're actually going to do, hopefully by the time this goes live, we'll have recorded about an hour's worth of escape game reviews.
Right, and that doesn't even count the trip next week when we'll be up in the St. Louis area. And we'll be doing some up there.
That reminds me, if you are in the St. Louis area, this I know this is the last minute, believe me. We waited until we confirmed that we will be up there this weekend.
Yeah, unless like a major hurricane, because there is something brewing in the Gulf, and it's New Orleans.
It's June. There's always something brewing in the flipping Gulf. But yes, so, barring an actual hurricane or other actual disaster, natural or man-made, we will be in St. Louis area this weekend. And if you would like to meet, chat, be on the podcast, let us know. We are on Twitter at Haunt Weekly. We are on Facebook at Haunt Weekly. Shoot us a message. Give us thumbs up, tweets, follows, likes, all that yummy, yummy stuff. And as always, subscribe to this podcast, wherever finer podcasts are distributed. They let us in for some reason. I have no idea why.
But, and also, as far as the trip goes, it looks like Sunday will probably be the best day to meet up with us.
But on that note, we did all these escape game reviews. We're doing those. And we kind of wanted to distill some of what we've gleaned. And because we're clickbaity, we wanted to make this ways to make your escape game terrible.
This is if you want to make the most horrible game ever that people will still pay for, but nobody will give it a good review.
We have you covered. We think we've got this formula figured out. Now, mind you, and we'll repeat this repeatedly through the podcast, this is coming from the vantage point of a player. We have never built an escape game. And, you know, that we're interested. It's something we might give a shot at sometime or work with someone on, but we have never done it. This is not in our field of expertise on the build side, but I think we're getting to where we have enough expertise on the player side to be able to discuss what we're thinking and feeling there.
We've played at least 8 games now. And we did 4 this month.
Four this month, and we're actually ramping up and doing even more next month. And we actually completed the last company in New Orleans this weekend.
So, which is part of the reason we were waiting to do them all together.
So now we got to go and record a whole crap ton of reviews.
So now that we've gone on this long tangent about why we're doing this.
We should actually do conference reminders, shouldn't
probably.
We? Crystal, why don't you kick us off?
All right, July 29th and 30th, the end of this month that's coming up really soon. Midsummer Scream, Long Beach, California, Long Beach Convention Center. Features presentations from Not Scary Farm, Six Flags Fright Fest, and the Queen Mary's Dark Harbor. Features a Hall of Shadows with 14 mini haunts put on by different attractions.
Now, this does not sound like one of the coolest things you've ever heard of. You're on the wrong damn podcast. I'm just telling you right now.
I would love to see that. That sounds awesome.
You know, I hear Star Talk is really good. You might want to check out that podcast.
It is really good, but I'm not... Anyway. MidsummerScream.org for that.
All right, after that, it's the Haunted Attractions Network Leadership Symposium. God, you need a breath just halfway through the flipping title on that one, don't you?
Might want to workshop.
Yeah, and then I'm not even done with the title, because the actual title is Innovations and Interactivity. Holy Christ. God, we started that title 3 minutes ago. But it is on August 1st. It's in Buena Park, California. And it is put on by Ganta Media, the organization that purchased the Haunted Attractions Network. It'll be held at Knott's Berry, a.k.a. Knott's Scary Farm. And the aim is to help attendees create an interactivity plan of their own and improve interactivity in their haunt. Speakers include John Cook from Knott's Scary Farm, Brian Llewellyn from The Queen Mary, a lot of the same people from above, and Leonard Pickle from Entrepreneurs and just about every other goddamn thing in the haunt industry.
Yeah, interestingly enough, though,
yeah,
possibly no longer from Hong
Kong. That's right.
Because it was purchased.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
Tickets are $60. You can get more details at HalloweenAttractionNetwork.com.
Okay, then August 5th through 6th, we have Scare LA, Los Angeles Convention Center West Halls. Over 200 vendors and many panels on the haunted attraction business. ScareLA.com for more lovely information.
All right, then after that, it is Halloween and Haunt Fest Show, October 25th through 27th at Dallas-Fort Worth in the Mesquite Convention Center. Learn more at HalloweenAndHaunt.com.
Then October 14th and 15th. This is their second show this year. This is why we're including them, because we know you probably won't be able to make this one, but you might be able to make their earlier one next year.
Yeah, it's in spring. It was just actually, it's summer. We just missed it.
Yeah. So it's Sinister Creature Con. Scottish Rite Center in Sacramento, California includes all things horror, including filmmakers, makeup, haunted attraction engineers, and actors. It is sponsored by the Cemeterium, Haunted House, and Direwood Scare Park. Dire World, excuse me. Feature guests include Ted Raimi, Scott McDonald, Marky Ramone, and Ubi Bowl.
Yeah.
Sinister Creature Consta. Wow, that runs together really
fast. Yes, it does. I think it's hands down the worst domain we've ever had to say on this podcast.
Yes, and you did it last time, which is why it threw me off. SinisterCreatureConSacramento.com.
Yes, indeed. So that is a doozy. But yes, one piece of information that was alluded to is a major change in the haunted attraction business now.
Conferences.
I'm a little flustered by this, honestly.
Yeah.
HauntCon has been purchased.
Yes. Halloween and...
Halloween and Party Expo.
Party Expo has... purchased the HauntCon.
Yeah, basically, so, that's the news. And it's
that's the news. It's going to be here in New Orleans.
Yes, which is great for me.
Yeah, they're running side by side, so I'm pretty sure that the Halloween Party Expo people are the floor show, the trade show for... What about the floor show?
show?
Yeah, the trade show for HauntCon this year, which is good. Because it's been sparse. Yeah.
And it's actually named now, by the way. HauntCon is also going to renaming because of this. I just now learned this.
Okay.
It's HauntCon, Haunted Attraction and National Trade Show and Convention, which, that was the original name. It's just the full name. Okay. They've changed the way they display it on the Facebook page then. Okay. They're probably going through and doing some renovations. But yeah, they have been purchased.
Yeah, so that's really big news. We're still waiting for any information to come out about it. And, of course, we'll share it with you guys when we get it.
Yeah, I mean, right now, the big question I have is the expo required a business license to even attend.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if HauntCon is going to shift that way or if it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's my big question, too, because we haven't gone to the expo before because we don't have that business license.
You know, and
we might have it by then, though.
Well, it's such a trivial thing to overcome, really. Yeah. It's just not been something that really benefited us because we are, like I said, large-scale home haunters.
Yeah.
We're the crazy-ass home haunters. We're not in this for the business right now. We work with pro haunts, but we don't actually, you know, run one yet.
Yeah.
And we keep debating endlessly the prospect of going pro with and keep deciding against it. But long story short, yeah, we do not have a business license related to the haunted attraction side of things. So, yeah, I don't know, but I'm going to be interested. And you know what? It's in New Orleans. I'm excited about that, obviously.
Yeah.
Because, A, that means I can sleep in at the conference.
Yeah.
And I just saved a lot of money on a hotel.
Yeah.
But, more to the point, I know that the tours will be of very cool area haunts.
Right.
I mean, Mortuary, House of Shock, they could probably take a bus trip to Rise and 13th Gate.
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
what I'm excited about is all of our listeners that are going to come to New Orleans and maybe be able to meet us in person.
Yeah, we're going to have to arrange something one of the nights that nothing else is going on, and we'll take everyone to this, either this neat little German bar.
Yeah.
We know. Or we can take them to a neat little English pub.
I'm thinking the English pub has a better venue.
Okay. But we'll work all that out later. Yeah. That's a long way off. That's not until January.
Yeah, but just know that we will probably be doing some kind of party outside of it if you're coming to town for that.
Yes, and basically, be prepared. As Scar said.
Exactly.
Be prepared. Okay, I can't do that. That sounds terrible.
It's okay.
Please don't do that. Never do that again. Just don't. No, all right. But anyway, so yes, HauntCon 2017 will be a big deal for us. This is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really, really into it. I mean, 2018, rather, not 2017. 2017 is this year. 2017 is in the books. 2018 is going to be very interesting.
Right.
So, yes. But on that note, back to the topic at hand, while we still have, 40 minutes. We still have 80% of the podcast left.
Well, that's good, because we had a lot to talk about.
But yes, we've been doing a lot of escape games lately. It's become our favorite off-season activity. We've been to ones run by haunted attractions, like the ones at the 13th Gate, the Mortuary. We've been at ones not run by haunted attractions, like Escape My Room Nola, Clue Carré, Breakout Mobile, so on and so forth. We have not done Rise yet. That's the big missing one for us.
Right.
But that is next on our agenda locally.
Locally, yeah.
Yes, locally. And here's the thing. We're going to be doing reviews on all the escape games we've done, except the 13th Gate. Why? We already did that one.
Yeah.
And it's at GarbageHorror.com.
Yeah. Well, we did the first one that we did there. We've done two rooms since then.
Mm-hmm.
So I may revisit it, but probably not.
Honestly, I don't think we will, because what are we going to say new? And one of the rooms was beta anyways.
Yeah. So it
can't really review a beta room.
No.
That's kind of bull.
Yeah.
So we're graciously invited to beta test room, and then we give him a review and point out flaws in the beta room that he said was bad. It seems like an awfully dick move to me.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I can't really think of anything new to say about it. But yeah, so go to GarbageHorror.com or YouTube. We're GarbageHorror on YouTube. Go there. You can see our ugly mugs.
Yep.
Well, my ugly mug, her pretty mug. And listen to our reviews on all the escape games we've done, plus other haunt reviews we've done over the years and our thoughts on that. Kind of how we got started doing this podcast thing. We wanted to do something like that, but that we could do every week.
And that went into detail about things other than just reviews of haunts.
Yes. So. But anyways, in doing these reviews, when talking these things out and planning what we're going to say, we've noticed a pattern in these escape games.
Yeah.
The good ones did certain things. Uh-huh. The bad ones did certain things.
Yeah.
And so we just decided to make it a list. And because we're clickbaity and we're terrible bastards, we decided to focus on the negative and find ways you can totally trash your escape game if you are so inclined. On that note, though, obviously the idea here is you're going to take what we say and you're going to flip the script and do the good thing.
Right.
That's what I'm hoping.
We really should have set this up good cop, bad cop.
That would have been funny, actually. Yeah. But yeah. So, yes, if you're considering launching an escape room or just in the process of building one or planning one out,
right,
this is some stuff to consider. And even if you have an ongoing one, there are some things in here that you can change today.
Yeah.
Literally today. To make your game significantly better.
Yeah.
That's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I try to put these in order, and using my imagination, what happens from the minute I arrive. And I guess item one, and I really think we should make this now eight, because I just realized I want to add something to this. Item one...
Numbers don't matter.
No, number. The Spanish... No one expects the Spanish Inquisition. It just became the top eight in my head. Or no, seven plus a bonus. This is the bonus.
This is zero.
This is zero. We're counting... We're doing the computerized counting.
That's fine.
That's fine. But item zero, have a really crappy booking system.
Yes.
That is like a great first step to crapping all over your escape room.
Yes.
Really give them just a dastardly experience before they even set foot on your property.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do things like make sure they have to book 48 hours in advance. 24 hours is even pushing it for me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of escape games are kind of an impulse thing.
Right. I'd like to be within 12 hours.
Yeah, I think
that's reasonable.
Yeah. But yeah, but main thing is, even more than the time frame to register, is just make it really crappy and confusing.
Yeah.
Make it difficult to understand.
Yeah.
And yes, some have actually pulled that off.
They have.
So much so, in one case, and I'm not naming names, this is not about naming names in this, we name names in the reviews.
Yes.
Go there for those. But in one case, we actually booked on the wrong goddamn day.
Yes. We were trying to get a birthday booking, and checked like 3 times to make sure that it was right, showed up, and they're like, no, you can't play now. And we're like, why not?
You're not booked. You're going to be doing this tomorrow at a time that doesn't make any sense for us.
Yeah, because, you know, that's when we do other stuff on
and I think we figured it out. Was because we crossed the threshold for booking for the next day.
Yeah.
And it auto-forwarded us.
Yeah.
To the wrong day. And I think that's exactly what happened. So we were having some back and forth conversation about what game we wanted to do.
Yeah.
And that it took a while. Is what I'm saying. It took a while. But yes, have a completely crappy booking system. Make sure people are really PO'd before they walk in the door.
Yes.
Or right as they walk in the door. That's a good first step.
Yeah. That is.
Now, actual step one or way one.
Yeah.
Have over-the-top rules.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen this in haunts, too. Mm-hmm. I can name a couple of haunts that pulled something very similar to this.
Right.
But every haunt and every escape game has rules.
Yeah.
They have rules. You can't do this, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. Present the rules clearly and present it in a way that's interesting. But if your presenting of the rules consists of someone standing in front of the crowd and basically saying, if you do these things, we will either throw you in jail or have security throw you out.
Yeah. That's just crazy pants.
Yeah, start off by threatening the customers a little.
Yeah, that's what you want to do in your escape room.
Yeah. And here's the thing, I've never really understood. None of the escape games we've done really handled this part very well. I would say. Several showed us videos.
Yeah. And videos are fine.
Videos are fine. I don't have any problem with the videos. But why not take this moment, since you have people there anyways, why not make them characters?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know why that isn't done.
Yeah, I mean, have your game master or whatever come out and, you know, mock. Be what wrestling fans would call the heel.
Now, I will say that one of the ones we went to did try to do that a little bit. But they made their game master the custodian.
Yeah.
So he was like maintenance custodian person. He's like, if anything breaks, you know, or you get stuck in somewhere, you know. So, but basically he was just a dude in his clothes and he had built a character to go with his.
Yeah, I think that was mostly his invention, if we're going to be honest.
Probably, yeah. Which is fine.
It's fine, but it points for extra effort, you know?
Yeah.
Points for the effort, but, yeah. Seriously, the good games, they will find a way to communicate the rules in a clear manner that's also not threatening or intimidating.
Right.
And that's where some of these games have fallen apart.
Yeah. And as you were saying earlier, it would be interesting to have a front-of-house character who introduces the rules and the games, all of the games.
Yeah.
Basically, because we are in an industry that's full of characters.
No!
just
say it ain't so.
Take some of your most well-spoken people and put them in costume and have them do it.
Yeah, could be a lot of fun. And honestly, I don't see why this isn't exploited more, especially by the ones run by haunted attractions.
Right.
Because they already know the power of these front-of-house characters.
Yeah.
And I get that, yeah, that's money, but you already have people operating front of house.
Yes. Okay, so if we ever open one of these, mm-hmm. we will have, like, a Houdini character.
Yeah.
And he will be there doing tricks of how to get out of handcuffs and stuff.
Yeah, something.
While he's explaining the rules.
Anything.
We could do that.
I would take literally anything over a way some of these games are made of.
And I can say that because we're not going to open an escape room.
I would just have any character front of house. That'd be fun.
No, I don't.
Item two, way two. Have unclear goals.
Yes.
I really hate this one.
Uh-huh.
Because so often we have been in an escape game and it's like, okay, here's what you're trying to do. You're trying to escape.
Yep, that's it.
Bye. boom, shut the door and leave.
It's yeah.
Like, okay, we need to know what the objective. You're going to tell me a story.
Right.
Because pretty much every escape room has a story. The story should include what the end goal of that room is.
Right.
And if it doesn't, then I don't really know what I'm working toward. And I've been in rooms where a couple of rooms we've been in, we got out.
Yeah.
And we had no idea what we did to get out.
Yeah.
Literally. How is this the act that got us out? What does this connect with that? How does this, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there was not a logical path of progression. Mm-hmm.
Now, one obvious way to do this is to have an overarching puzzle of some stripe.
Right.
Like, rebuild the Anubis.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something like that, that really is an overarching puzzle that you work on piece by piece and build on throughout the entire game.
Right.
And then when it's done, when that's done, you know you win.
Yeah.
And that gives you, like, a progress meter, too. You know that there's six pieces to this, or there's, you know, six letters in the combination or whatever.
Right.
And you've got three. So you know you're probably about halfway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there have been several rooms we've been in where it's like, we won? Really?
Yeah.
Yay?
Yeah.
Woo. Who?
Mm-hmm.
How? seriously, how? So, yeah, I don't really understand that. Like I said, have a story, keep it simple.
Right.
And just, yeah.
And the other thing about keeping it simple is don't have two stories going on at the same time.
Oh, God, no.
Because we have... Or if you want to have the worst one, have multiple stories, as many as you want.
Have all the stories.
Yes, exactly.
Throw more stories at it. You think you got enough stories? No, add more.
Yeah. But, I mean, that was frustrating because we finished the one that had multiples early with enough time to do the other one, but we didn't know that it really existed. We just knew we kept finding clues for something else.
It didn't quite fit in what we had.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's the other thing is... Optional puzzles, I don't like those personally.
Yeah.
And the reason I don't is because it's so easy to get bogged down working on optional stuff, not realizing it's optional.
Yeah.
And then finishing the mandatory stuff because you were too busy farting around with the stuff that you didn't have to do.
Right.
You know, streamline your game, make it so that there's one goal, one objective, and obstacles along the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, make it clear what the definition of winning is. Don't listen to Charlie Sheen. make it clear how you win the game, and let the players know how to progress closer and closer toward that.
Yeah.
And similarly, and then this might sound counterintuitive, but don't have linear gameplay either. Oh, my
right.
God. This was probably the most... bonkers thing I've seen.
Yeah.
Because an escape room, most escape rooms can hold between 8 and 12 players.
Right.
The ones we played have had a maximum of 10. We've never actually done one with 10 people.
No.
We've never had a full room, I don't think.
No, I think the most... maybe the very first one.
Maybe.
They might have done that.
I think we were still one shy. I think that was 8 and we only had 7.
Okay. Yeah, I think 7 is the most we've done.
Yeah, 7 I think is the most we've done. But regardless, because I was alone in my cell, and there was two persons per cell max.
No, I was with you.
You were?
Uh-huh.
Somebody was alone, I thought.
Ellie.
Okay. Oh, no one likes Ellie.
We love Ellie.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. We love Ellie. Oh, yes. But the point of the matter is, so yeah, someone was alone, so obviously it was not a capacity.
Right.
But the point remains... linear gameplay basically makes it so that one person could play that game.
Yeah. Yeah. You should not be able to do an escape room by yourself.
There needs to be a way for multiple people to be working productively at the same time.
Yes.
Or multiple small groups.
Exactly.
And one of the ways I've seen that solved repeatedly is having that big overarching puzzle.
Yeah.
That you have to work on little bit by little bit as you go. And that way, as you unlock the next piece in that, one group can break off and work on that while the other people go and work on that.
Right.
Go and work on the next step. And that's a powerful thing because that keeps everybody engaged.
Right.
And if the next step, for example, is to play with a decoder and get a code. And that decoder takes a couple of minutes, but only one person can do it.
Yeah.
And no one else can progress until it's finished.
Yeah.
9 out of 10 people in that room are sitting on their ass doing nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's really annoying.
They're jerking around. They're doing nothing. I mean, they're probably doing what I was doing, looking around the room and counting stuff and trying to figure out stuff that ain't there.
Yeah, because once you play an escape room that isn't like that, and most of them aren't.
Yes.
Then you expect to be able to be working on something while someone's doing the obvious clue. And if it doesn't happen, then you're really lost and it's a distraction.
Yes. Yeah, and it gets really frustrating because the person who's doing the clue is, I mean, if it's, especially if it's like a long clue, that I'm thinking of a specific game when I talk about this decoder.
Yeah.
It was a big, long decoder project with 12 letters and spinning and multiple. It was overly complicated for one puzzle.
Yeah.
It was a bit much, but Ellie had it because she's really good at that type of stuff.
Yep.
She's doing that. And everyone else in that room is roaming around looking and feeling stuff, and we're just getting frustrated.
Yeah.
Because we're not making anything happen.
Right, because she had to open that in order to open something that allowed us to go to the very next thing.
Yeah.
So, because without the thing that she was working on, we would not have been able to progress. So there was absolutely nothing else to work on.
Yeah, nothing at all. And there wasn't enough in that room, really, to find things. That's one of the things you can do, is you can make it so that there are puzzles where you have to find all the things.
Right.
And you can sprinkle the things like crack throughout the room.
Yeah.
And that way you're rewarding those players who maybe aren't doing the decoder thing,
right,
for example, but are going and searching and feeling shelves and sides of doors.
Yeah.
You can reward them by giving them something that they are helping to progress.
Yeah. Now, I will say one thing about the overarching plot, or the overarching puzzle.
Yeah.
Make sure that it's portable.
Oh, yes.
And that easily so. Because one of the ones we did, we started it in one room, and then we needed it 3 rooms later.
Yeah.
And just happened to, we were able to go around that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if we had waited for the guy to get back, well, we still would have gotten out. But
yeah. Yeah. But long story short, linear gameplay is just a great way to assure that the bulk of players are not doing anything at any given time.
Yeah.
Reward the players not working on the task at hand. Find something for them to do that is useful.
Yeah.
Because, God, there's nothing worse than being in an escape game and not contributing anything.
Yeah. Because everybody wants to be able to say, hey, I did this part.
I had my moment. I had a moment.
We worked great as a team. It's about teamwork, people.
Yeah, and that just strips the teamwork right out of it.
Yeah.
Way number four. Make all the puzzles identical, man.
Exactly.
Just the same damn puzzle over and over again. How about make them all, like combination locks where you get a code, you put a code in, you get a code, you put a code in. That unlocks another. Wait, what is it? It unlocks another code that you use to put in another lock and get another code. And maybe that one gets you a piece of a code and another code, but that code goes to another lock.
Yes. And make sure that they're all the same lock.
Oh, yes. All the exact same master lock, letter lock.
Yeah. Yeah.
I swear to God, that one game, there's a shortage of master lock combo locks because of that place.
Well, that's probably not a bad thing for the general public.
No, for security's sake, that's actually a very good thing. Oh, my God. But, I mean, a similar principle, though, make sure all your puzzles aren't word problems.
Right.
Make sure they're not all math problems. Make sure they're not all, orientation problems.
Yeah.
Make them varied. And because one of the things about teamwork is when you build your team, it's like trivia night.
Right.
You want a team that's diverse with their talents.
Yeah.
There are things I'm good at that you're not good at, things you're great at that I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And Ellie brings things to the table that neither of us can do.
Right.
So, we all have our diverse talents, but if it's all the same type of puzzle, then only one person is really contributing.
Right.
Really have a good variety in that puzzle. Have word problems. Have visual problems, have math problems, have game problems.
Yeah.
You know, have a very, very wide variety of stuff. And, you know, when you do that, it makes the game more engaging. Because, like you said, that's the thing about the escape room. I don't care if there's 3 people or 12 people in that room. Every person needs to have their moment.
Yeah.
The I figured something out. I put something in place.
Right.
I achieved something. I moved us as a team forward.
Exactly.
Everybody needs that moment, and that can't happen if the challenges are not diverse.
Right.
And like I said, find a code and put a code in. That's not...
That doesn't do it.
Yeah, that ain't it. You know, find ways to make the problems varied and engaging.
Right.
It can be everything from positioning a magnet over X to solving a poem to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The best and most enjoyable ones, I remember in one, we literally went from looking at a map of New Orleans to solve a word puzzle based upon street names in the city,
right,
in the French Quarter, to, and I kid you not, ballroom dancing in the next room to try and solve a different math problem.
Right.
So that's hell of variety, man.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yes, and we've done others where you had to bounce beams of light using various mirrors, and those are pretty fun.
Yeah, beams of light or lasers, and those are like algebra / trig problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, ones where you've had to do, in that same one, we also had to do the most bad shit insane math problem we've ever done in an escape room.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, this escape room said, you're allowed to use your cell phones as long as they just go to the calculator.
Yep.
You're not allowed to open up the camera or anything else.
Yeah.
But don't go Google the solution.
Basically, keep your phones and use them as calculators.
They became very expensive calculators.
Yeah. And very necessary.
Very necessary, too.
Calculators.
That was, whew. Yeah.
That was lots of zeros.
I'm not tremendously good at math to begin with.
Yeah.
I'm really, really glad. And whoever figured out, by the way, how to make that problem work is a flipping genius.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was based on roulette, and it turns out that any spin on the roulette table would have worked.
Yeah.
That's just...
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's a trick roulette table. No, it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's the secret.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, make sure the clues are varied and interesting. But if you want to have the crappy one, just make them all the same damn locks and have fun.
Yeah.
Even if they can be combination locks or keys, you find a key, put in a lock, find a key, put in a lock. It can be that too. Just make it so boring.
Yeah.
All right. Way number 5.
5.
Have no clues match their puzzles, or clearly indicate what puzzle they go to.
Yes. My God. So the one room that we were in had 4 locks within view.
And actually 6, I think 6 or 7. Once
Wait,
you got
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 locks in view.
Okay. Yeah. All that had the same number of letters. Or numbers, rather.
Numbers. It was numbers.
And
numbers.
Yeah. All the same number of numbers. So... You go around, you get a code, and then the team immediately just disperses like rats to try and log.
Yeah, because it wasn't clear which one you were working on.
No, you had no way of knowing. There was no indication that this goes to a chest, this one goes to the dresser, this one goes to something else.
Right.
There was no indication.
And part of that goes back to that being varied in your puzzles.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this one, it was crazy because you really did not know which lock you were working on.
And since they were all identical locks, there was no way for, like, me. And then they had the keypad lock, which was also the same number of digits.
Yes.
So you had another. It was bonkers.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, everyone runs out and just tries random locks.
Yeah.
That's not problem solving.
No, that's just guessing.
That's at that point.
That's an educated guess.
That's not. Yeah, it's trial and error.
Yeah.
And that's not problem solving. Don't mistake trial and error for problem solving.
Right.
And puzzle solving.
Right.
Those are very different things.
They are.
So yeah, that. Oh God, that room. Oh, it so broke me.
Yeah.
It so ticked
I'm
me.
I'm glad we've had better.
Yes,
experiences
I'm glad
since.
The following experiences have been 100 times better.
Yeah.
and I just wish we'd avoided. But you know what? Actually, I'm glad we did do it, because now we get to do a review, an honest review.
Yes.
And maybe warn others.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's definitely a very good way to screw up your escape game.
Right.
Number six. Way number six. Have useless or excessive clues. And specifically, I'm talking about the clues the voice of God gives you.
Right.
As we like to call this the voice of God.
Yes.
It's kind of been our thing. But the game master, the person who is speaking over the loudspeaker through the television screen and helping you play, that person to us is the voice or the word of God.
Yeah.
Depending upon whether they're communicating through a TV screen or the microphone.
Yeah.
And the long story short of it is, that person is in a precarious position.
Mm-hmm.
They can ruin the game so goddamn many ways.
Yes.
They can ruin it by giving utterly useless or inadequate clues and just letting players flounder and go, you know, screw you, pal.
Yeah.
Or they can just, like, spoiler alert the whole game.
Yeah.
And we've seen both.
We have.
We have seen both. So, general rules here, Christ.
For doing the best or the worst.
Doing the worst. If you want to do the absolute worst I've seen, put your clues on a timer and feed them whatever clues you deem appropriate for that minute in the game.
Yes.
Regardless of whether they need clues, want clues, have progressed past that point.
Yes.
Or are not at that point.
Right.
That really cheesed me off.
Yes.
Because in this particular room, we hit a spree.
Yeah.
The first 5 minutes in that game, I'm pretty sure we did 20 minutes worth of stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
We just, like, we were, our team was crackerjack, man. We had that other couple.
Yeah.
And we were just, yeah, we nailed this.
Yeah.
We were good. And then we get stuck.
Yeah.
We hit a wall. Poof. We flounder.
Yeah.
Thinking it's over now. And then the voice of, oh, that was the text of God, but the word of God. The word of God comes on the TV screen and gives us a clue for something we had literally solved 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
I nearly threw something at the TV.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So yes, if you want to make your game absolutely frustrating, definitely, definitely do that. Or you can go the other way and just have your, you know, your voice of God completely spoil the game.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, you got out in 15 minutes. How'd you pull that off? Well, you told us everything to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is so difficult, and I don't envy that job.
No. And we've actually talked to
several people
who do it, yeah. And they say that whenever you start doing it, you want to give all the clues to help the people, because you want them to succeed.
Yes.
At least the good ones want you to succeed. Yeah. So, and then they have to restrain themselves from doing that.
Because then there's no challenge.
Yeah, because they're sitting there watching, and supposedly, at least in the good ones that you think really are watching you, are experiencing with you and have some sort of tenseness like you do trying to escape.
And one request, though, while we're on this front, don't ignore players screaming for help.
Yes.
Don't ignore them. If you have to say no, say no. I understand.
Yeah.
Players will understand. It's like, oh, it's too early for your next clue.
Yeah.
But don't just let them say, hey, need help. Because all that's going to do is it's going to cause them to keep focusing on trying to get your attention.
Right.
Rather than working on the goddamn clue.
Yeah.
So if they say they need help, if they're screaming it, say, you know, you got to wait a few minutes. I can't give you a clue yet.
Yeah.
And that will at least redirect their energy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, when that's just it, we've been in rooms where we were sitting there genuinely stuck as hell.
Yeah.
And getting actually cranky about how stuck we are.
Right.
And calling for help and just dead silence.
Yep. Silence on the other end.
Oh, yes.
God's not listening.
Well, you know, I think there's a couple children's books to talk about that. But anyways, way number seven and the final way for this. Broken stuff. This is my favorite way to ruin your game. Have all your stuff be broken.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Or at least have the important stuff be broken.
Right.
Here's the thing. So far, we've done all these escape rooms, and we've only lost once.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, I'm frustrated about losing. I don't like to lose. I admit that. But I really hate losing for bull reasons.
Yeah.
If I lose fair and square,
Yeah.
It's better. You know, I may be a little bit cranky at myself, but that's internalized anger, you know?
Right.
Not cranky at the game. The way we refer to this loss is it has a huge asterisk.
Yeah.
Because there were two locks in the room mm-hmm. that were broken.
Yeah.
One cost us at least 15 minutes.
At least, yeah.
And the other cost us at least another 5.
Yeah, and we were really, really close to getting out at the end. It had the right combinations, had the right things
but
that they went to.
But the lock did not work.
Yeah. And this is one of those that did the rules where they said you will be evicted from the game. If you,
we will have security escort you out.
You don't have to use force on it. If you try to use force, you'll be escorted from the premises.
Yeah.
And then the freaking thing was broken and you had to use force.
Yeah.
Even after the game was over, we tried the lock in the light. And it took 3 tries, 3 really,
really
tough pulls, to get it open.
And that's just it. It's like, ugh. And the way I think about it is this, we spent about $120 on that experience.
Yeah.
For all the tickets we purchased.
Yeah.
And it was ruined by a $5 lock.
Yeah.
Go through your games regularly, check your locks, make sure they open as you expect. Also check to make sure that all of your secret compartments spring open the right amount. We had one game where right. we opened a secret compartment. We opened it successfully, but the little springy thingy
yeah.
didn't have adequate tension on it. And it just kind of, instead of going meow, boom, in the opening, it went,
yep.
And we didn't even see it.
No.
So, I mean, then we ended up getting out of that one, and it ended up not really costing us that much time.
Right.
But still, these are the types of things that wear down, they break, and right. if you're a player in that game,
yeah.
It's frustrating.
And that was actually a good example of a good voice of God.
Yeah.
Because they saw that we didn't see something had happened.
Yeah.
And they said, hey, did anything yeah. happen there?
Yeah, that's why that one actually didn't impact us much, was because we, well, I guess we didn't get it. And the voice of God's like, are you sure nothing happened?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think the voice of God was equally as confused as we were with what was going on. Because it was supposed to be much more obvious.
Right.
But it wasn't. But yeah, that's a good, and that's an example of how voice of God can help overcome those problems. But seriously, take the time, test your stuff, repair, maintain, and all that.
Yeah.
It's really that simple. So yeah, those are the 7 ways to totally bork your game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did add to this list a few ways that don't really matter as much, I find.
Yeah.
After doing enough of these games, I these are the ones that I thought would really mean a lot to me.
Yeah.
And they didn't. I think some of these are ways escape games are different from haunts.
Right.
And things to think about. So I really wanted to highlight these.
Mm-hmm.
Item 1 that didn't matter as much, and this one I'm totally surprised by.
Yeah.
Immersion.
Yeah.
I could have sworn that I would be really, really cheated by games that didn't have good immersion.
Right.
I'd feel let down.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? If the focus is on gameplay, it's a finely crafted, well-structured game. It
yeah.
feels challenging but not frustrating. It incorporates teamwork. You know what? Immersion isn't that big of a deal.
Yeah.
We were in one game where it was literally an office room with some paintings on the wall and some props from a casino.
Yeah.
And it was one of the most fun ones we've done.
Yeah.
And it was just a blast. It had no immersion factor at all. You were always cognizant of the fact you were in a random office building somewhere.
Right.
And that the door wasn't even really locked.
Yeah.
You were always aware of that.
Right.
But it's this deal of, it was, the puzzles were so good. The teamwork was there. And the difficulty level was just right on the nose.
Yeah.
It was perfect. I had a great time.
Yeah, me too.
I really thought immersion would be everything, but it's not. Immersion helps, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I'd like immersion.
Yeah.
But I don't have to yeah. have it to enjoy
if
the
you
game.
Have a, if you have a choice between a fun game and a boring room,
yeah,
go with a fun game.
Yeah.
Fun, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like immersion, too. I'm sorry, I walked all over you on that one.
It's okay. It's gone now.
No, I'm
sorry.
Come back moments passed. All right, the second thing that didn't matter as much, once again, different from haunts.
Right.
Cost.
Yeah.
All the games we've done, and I actually went back and checked this, were in the $20 to $30 range.
Right.
The differences in price just were not that significant.
No.
With haunted attractions, we have haunts in this area that are $12. We have haunts that are 30. We have a much bigger variety in prices. We also have a much bigger breadth of time spent in the attraction.
Right.
We have some haunts that take, you know, damn near 30 minutes to go through. We have some that you're through in 10.
Mm-hmm.
With this, the pricing was fairly consistent, and you knew, unless you were, like, blowing through the room like we did one time,
right,
you know roughly how long you're spending in that room.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think part of it is that since you can plan
yeah.
when you're going to be there and where you're going to be, when you're showing up, when you're entering, all that, it makes it easier for travel, too.
Right.
We were able with some of these to say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to grab lunch here, we're going to be at the escape game at this time, and then we're going to go elsewhere afterward. You can literally slot it into a day very easily.
Yeah.
Where a haunted attraction, given line times, that's much more difficult.
It is.
So,
and especially ones that you've never been to before. You have no idea how they run their line.
Yeah.
How long it takes. You have no idea how long it actually takes to go through the haunt.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one seems to be able to get it right.
Yeah.
And that's because you can't predict
how people are gonna behave
in a haunt.
Yeah, I can.
They're either gonna run through or they're gonna stroll through.
Or they're gonna do something in between, or
yeah.
they're gonna start running through, then get stopped by the group in front of them, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff happens. That's basically what it comes down to. If you can predict how quickly an individual group will get through a haunt, you are officially clairvoyant.
Yeah.
And I am goddamn impressed.
Yeah.
Unless you were literally doing a hayride or something like that where you control their pace.
Right.
Or a haunted trail where you're hiking them through.
Yeah, or scene-based haunt.
Then you cannot predict. A free roam haunt, no, you can't predict it.
Mm-hmm.
But with an escape room, you should have at least a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
And finally, this is the one I found most interesting. Location didn't matter.
No.
We've been to escape games here in New Orleans. We went to one in the French Quarter. CBD. Two in the CBD.
Two in the CBD.
The business district. One uptown.
Mm-hmm.
We've been to one out in Metairie, out in the suburbs-ish.
Yeah.
Been to one in Baton Rouge. We've been to Biloxi. We've been all over these places. But since we know what we're getting time-wise,
yeah.
the travel never... And like you said, we can slot it into other things.
Right.
That travel was never a big deal.
Yeah.
Because it's not... a matter of, oh, we're going to go to an escape game in Biloxi. It's, oh, we're going to go to Biloxi, spend a day in Biloxi, and do an escape game while we're there.
Right, exactly.
And that makes that travel time much less egregious, if you will.
Yeah, definitely.
And it also makes me much more comfortable going to other parts of town, because it's this deal of, instead of, oh, we're going to the mortuary, and then we're going to turn right around and come home... we're going to go to the mortuary, but first we're going to go get coffee at that coffee shop near, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
We can plan an afternoon or an evening around it. And so I've realized that the travel to these did not make me nearly as cranky as some of the travel to haunts, especially when we've been to haunts where we travel like 2 hours to get there, wait in line another hour, and then have 12 minutes in the haunt.
Yeah, or that one haunt that... we were in line for like 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. It was horrible.
Yeah, it was a rough experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the reality of it is that these are not haunted attractions. The things that really matter and make them good or bad
right.
are different. And I've got to say, having done enough of these now,
yeah.
the ones that have been the most immersive...
yeah.
have been the ones at haunted attractions.
Definitely.
Full stop. I mean, there is absolutely zero doubt. The one at the 13th Gate, I mean,
yeah.
see full review on garbage horror, obviously.
Yeah.
But, dear God.
Well, that and the mortuary.
Yeah, the mortuary, too.
And I thought it was really cool there,
mm-hmm.
because they're using actual scenes from the haunt that I've
yes.
been through when it was a haunted house.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, that's how they did that. That looks so cool up close. It looks as good up close as it does when you're
yeah.
just walking through.
And I have to admire the mortuary for something else on this. They do true 360 design.
They do.
Which is something a lot of haunts don't actually do.
Right.
They never actually think about how their haunt looks in the reverse.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense if you're just shoveling people through one direction.
Right.
But the thing about it is, if you're going to do an escape game, obviously it's got to be a full 360 design.
Right.
And, yeah, they do that, and it's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
But...
You know what the other thing is?
What?
Is that you can't tell where their actor runs are.
No, you can't.
Because we didn't stumble into them whenever we were in the room. And that might have been just because it was cordoned off from it. But
it might have been. It might have been very, very carefully planned so we couldn't.
I'm sure that it was.
But yeah, it's... But yeah, I think the haunted attraction ones have done the immersive side of this much, much better.
Definitely.
But, you know, as far as the game aspect of it, I think that part's open season, man. I mean, the games at the haunted attraction ones have been good, but there have been moments and puzzles in the non-haunted attraction ones I think were better.
Yeah.
Especially in terms of teamwork.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think the future here is going to be finding a way to really combine that immersion and the teamwork.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the problems I did have with some of the haunt ones, was they tended to be more linear in their structure. Not badly so, not too much so.
No, I don't know that I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I felt like we all had stuff to do.
Yeah. Oh, but the bottom line is this. The quality of the gameplay is irrespective of whether it's a haunted attractions escape room or another company's escape room.
Right, what we call an out-of-the-box.
Out-of-the-box, which actually at least a couple of them are not out-of-the-box.
Right. The one at the arcade, Laser Tag Center here, was actually decorated fairly nicely.
Yeah.
More so than just an empty room.
Yeah, I fully expected that one to be an office one myself.
And yeah, I called it. I'm just leaving it there.
You did. You actually did. They spent some money on that. I give them their credit.
Yeah.
And I respect that.
And it was nice to have a little immersion.
Yeah. And, you know, and actually, I want to say this. They did something there that I have not seen much at other escape rooms. They really played with the tactile side up by having you work with sand, for example.
Right.
They played a lot more with that element of it than some of these. But
they were also the only ones that used weighted objects to solve puzzles.
Yeah. Which did not necessarily work out the best.
No. But one of them did.
It's still very interesting stuff. But yeah, so long story short is, I think haunted attractions have the edge on the immersion side.
Right.
But I think we could stand to hone in, at least in this area, a little more on the gameplay side.
Yeah.
Fair?
Yeah.
I'm not saying we're bad on the gameplay side. I'm just saying that there are games that are obviously cheaper built.
Yeah.
That have really done some cool things on the gameplay side we're not seeing in the haunted attraction side.
Right.
I think that's fair.
I think so. Oh. And my last thought real quick.
Go ahead.
Is that I really prefer the voice of God to be a person talking to me.
Yes.
Over and... Because if you have your things programmed in any way, your clues, then... If we're asking a specific question, those clues might not answer them.
Yeah.
But a person can. A person can see, oh, this is why they're getting stuck.
They're ahead or they're behind or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting there calling out the numbers to put into things, and a voice of God would have been able to say, okay, this is, you've got it right. Let me come and check the lock.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. So. But anyways, all in all, it's about gameplay, and it's about that. And the hardest job in the industry right now is the Clue Master.
Yeah.
On this. That's, guy. You know what? We've spoken to several, as you said.
Yeah.
Sat down with more than a few, and I don't know how they do it, man. I'm going to be straight with you. But anything else? Any other thoughts before we wrap this up?
No.
Well, on that note, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. Hope you found this educational, informative on how to screw up your escape room. Once again, we are Haunt Weekly. We are at hauntweekly.com, hauntweekly on Twitter, hauntweekly on Facebook, and we will be doing escape game reviews at Garbage Horror on YouTube, so you can see our beautiful beaming faces there as we describe how we have experienced some of the local escape games.
Right, and those will be coming out intermittently over the next couple weeks.
Yeah, they're not going to be going up all before this. We're recording them, hopefully, before this goes live, knock on wood. But yes, they will not be going live immediately.
Yep. Right. And remember, if you're in St. Louis area, Sunday, if you're available, we'd love to meet you.
And if you're coming for HauntCon, just be prepared. Be thinking about yes. that. Be thinking about what you want to do to hang out.
Yep.
That it?
That's it.
On that note, everyone, thank you again. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this has been Haunt Weekly, episode number 81, 7 ways plus a bonus to screw up your escape game. We'll see you guys next time.